Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Here's a Stoop story by Mike Molina about what happens when you get it wrong and what it takes to get it right.
So I used to be a lawyer, and as a lawyer, if you get it wrong, somebody goes to jail for the rest of their lives. So I kind of stopped being a lawyer, and now I'm a teacher. And as a teacher, thank you very much. As a teacher, you get it wrong and someone hates themselves and loses all their self-esteem for the rest of their lives. So, hey, tomato, tomato. There's a lot of responsibility with being a teacher, and there's a lot of opportunity to get it wrong. So I got it wrong recently, but the story starts about 2 weeks ago. And I was actually getting it right. I was knocking it out of the park 2 weeks ago. My daughter is in seventh grade. And the seventh graders have the nasty habit of throwing the N-word around because they listen to hip-hop. Not the stuff I used to listen to, although the N-word was fuller than that as well. It's just different, right? It's a different context. And they love the word because it's my brother, you know, my friend, my dog, my homie. And so I was asked by the wise folks at Friends School where my daughter goes to come in and please talk to these young people to give them some historical perspective on the word. And so I gladly accepted, I told the story. I told the story of growing up in New Orleans, which is where I'm from. And I know everybody thinks New Orleans and like, oh, jazz, Mardi Gras, oh. But New Orleans is in the bottom of the South. You go any more further south than you in the Caribbean, okay? This is the bottom of the South, and New Orleans, if you grow up there, has a long racist, extremely racist history. Going back to slavery, it was a place where slaves would be distributed, redistributed. Enslaved people would lose their families and lose any possible connection to anything that they could hope of making of their lives, their children. This is New Orleans history. And so I'm telling them my history in New Orleans growing up in the 80s is the first generation to actually be integrated. And I tell them, when you hear the N-word, right, don't think my brother, my dog, my friend. Think of my mother at 10 years old as the oldest girl in the first family to integrate her block in the Lower Ninth Ward. I know that's hard to believe, the Lower Ninth Ward, from the infamy of terrible destruction and Hurricane Katrina, was once an all-white neighborhood. And my parents, my mother's family was one of the first black neighborhoods on the block. And at 10 years old, my little mother, who became a special education teacher for 25 years, who I walked across the stage with at Xavier University as she got her master's, we graduated together. It was an amazing woman who raised us while she was a librarian and a teacher and in school. At 10 years old, having to walk home and walk through boys throwing rocks at her and spitting on her and calling her the N-word. Right, so when you hear the N-word, don't think my brother, my friend, my dog. Think of my mother, who didn't deserve that, being spit on. I said, when you hear the N-word, think of my father, who grew up to get his PhD and became the president of a community college in Alabama. But when he was 8 years old and his could pass for white mother was walking with him on Rampart Street in New Orleans, he had to use the bathroom and she took him into this whites-only establishment, and they saw her and said, come on in, ma'am. And they saw my father and said, you can't bring that little N in here. And my grandmother, a very proud woman, turned beet red. And my father told me the story on his deathbed where he said, I was so embarrassed. My skin had made my mother ashamed. And he carried this with him and told me it on his deathbed. So I said, when you hear the N-word, don't think my brother, my dog, my friend, think of my father. And he didn't deserve that. I said, so when you hear the N-word, think of me. Fifth grade, 10 years old, one of the first black boys to join this all-white Cub Scout troop in Lakeview, an all-white neighborhood in New Orleans. We're there, and, you know, integration wasn't real smooth. I don't know if you know that. Like, it wasn't like kumbaya, my long-lost white brother. It was more like, let's play football, and when we play football, let's make sure to organize it the way it should be organized, black versus white. And so we did that at the Cub Scout meeting. We'd have the Cub Scout meeting out in front of the Cub Scout leader's house. We would have black-on-white football games. And believe me, this was the best way to deal with what we were feeling, honestly. The problem was usually football games, you know, they can get physical and aggressive. And when you add in racial dynamics, they turn into fights. And so often our football games would turn into fights. This one particular time, I got in a fight with the Cub Scout leader's son. And I remember, you know, I don't know where I got this from. Like, who does this in a fight? I uppercutted him in the stomach. And he was crying, you know, goes back in the house. His dad comes out, the Cub Scout leader. And I'm a little kid. I'm not a big guy right now. But when I was 10 years old, I was tiny. And he comes out and he walks up to me and he puts his hands around my neck and he squeezes a little bit and he says, I could break your little in neck right now and get away with it. And then lets me go. And I know I was afraid, but the thing I really felt more than anything was just resignation, because I knew I couldn't do anything. I couldn't physically get this man off me. I couldn't defend myself. And it was a moment of less terror than like just anger, fear, resignation, just all these emotions that I couldn't, you know, handle at that age. So I told this story. I said, when you hear the N-word, don't think my brother, my dog, my friend. Think of me, a little 10-year-old boy getting choked by a grown man, right? And the hatred that it would take a man to do that to a child. Think of the scar on my eye I got from a skinhead who hit me with a skull ring and spikes on it. Think of all these things when you hear the N-word, because that's the history of it, right? And the kids asked these great questions. I was like, oh, this is not getting it wrong. This is getting it right. I mean, they were asking the perfect questions. You know, are you still angry? Does it still bother you what happened to your mother? Does it still bother you what happened to you? And I didn't have an immediate answer. I was kind of like, well, you know, I know they didn't deserve it. I didn't deserve it. I really didn't give them a good answer. But the rest of that weekend and the rest of the week, I was in a funk. I mean, I could feel this unease in my body, this anger, this rage. I didn't have any place to put it. It's just disgust, you know, shame, guilt, you know, embarrassment, just all these things. I was feeling it as just a malaise throughout the rest of the weekend. And I realized I hadn't processed so much of this stuff. I talked about it. I told this story, you know, but I hadn't really processed the pain of that, of being a 10-year-old kid with a grown man wrapping his hand around your neck and calling you this word. So fast forward a week or so, I'm teaching Huck Finn at Gilman, which is where I teach. I teach juniors, which means it's coordinated classes, girls from Bryn Mawr and Roland Park and Gilman. They're all in the class with me, and I really appreciate being in co-ed classes. And so we're teaching Huck Finn, and there's this one girl, and she is really, really getting it. I mean, she's hitting on all cylinders. She recognizes how Twain is playing with the notion of whiteness as so-called purity and goodness. And we're talking about Pap, Huck's dad, and how he's a drunk, evil bastard, and he's frog belly white, and he's dead fish white, right? And she's getting it, right? And I keep calling on her. Let's call her Allison. I keep calling her. I'm like, Allison, that's a great point, Allison. And then finally, a boy sitting next to me says, that's not her name. And I'm like, oh, my God. This is an Asian student. And I had confused her with another one of my Asian girl students in another class. And this girl, the two girls had zero, nothing in common. The girl I confused her with is direct from China. She has a really thick accent. She's looks like she's not, you know, you can tell when somebody's not born and raised in America, just the way she presents. And there's really nothing they have in common. And so I'm just like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. Please come talk to me after class. We continue with class. I go up to her and I say, you know, I'm really, really sorry. She's like, whatever. You know, I didn't even hear it. And so I'm like, even if you didn't hear it, you know, I really want you to know I see you. I see you. You're really smart. I read your paper, and I started trying to quote things from her paper. I know who you are. I see you. And I'm tearing up while I'm apologizing to her. And she's looking at me like, what the hell? Like, is it really that big a deal to you? Like, she's probably like, this happens to me every day. So, like, you know what? And I'm just like, I don't want to be part of that. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to be a part of that. And I, you know, I apologize to her. I thank the boy for stepping up and acknowledging that for her. If she didn't hear, maybe she did, and she didn't want to say anything, but he stepped up. But I'm thinking about, why did I get so upset about it? I go talk to my colleagues, and my colleagues are kind of like, you know, that's not that big a deal. It happens, you know. And I'm like, nah, but it is a big deal. Because, you know, one of the reasons I don't often like telling the story about being choked and what happened to my mom and my dad and all that is because I think it lets us off the hook a little bit. Because we can all walk out of here and be like, well, I'm not that racist. I'm not that dude. I would never do that. But the truth is, like, we all get it wrong, right? I'm nothing like any of the people I described who terrorized my family or me. But here I am erasing a girl, a smart, intelligent young woman's, like, being as her teacher, right, based upon her race. And that's what that word does. That's what the word ultimately does. And this is what I was trying to communicate to the seventh graders. And here I am kind of undermining that with my juniors. And so I got it wrong. I got it wrong. And here I am telling the story to you all. And I was struggling, and I asked one of my peer storytellers, like, what should be my point? Like, why? And she was like, you know, maybe you don't have a point. You know, maybe you don't have it figured out. And I was like, thank you. You just solved that problem for me real quick. So ultimately, I don't have an answer for you. I know that we get it wrong. I do know that, like, if we can get it wrong and then forgive each other and be generous, if we can get it wrong and be humble and apologize, if we can get it wrong and just be genuine with each other and say, I got it wrong, will you please forgive me? I think we can figure out how to get it right.
That was Mike Molina telling his Stoop story about the power of forgiveness, humility, and those small acts that can do a lot for humanity. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're with us on the record. Enjoy the weekend.
Listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.